que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denijir Dilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundación Xiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President.
And it's the Thursday, July 20th edition in 2023 of Bathroom of Spears Broadsides. Unfortunately, we have had some serious transmission problems earlier on, which, along with the usual Thursday pileup of Huff meeting, coming back from trips to the north to pick up street sheets and other excuses, I'm going to be laying upon you here another flashback, and this flashback actually I thought couldn't even be put up as an archive because our transmission was not working from distant Texas, where it stems originally from. But that eventually got fixed, but not really in time to avoid a kind of a rushing kind of attitude here. So what you've got is you've got a flashback to December 2nd, 1999, which is largely a debate between, well, I'm trying to be moderator, but it's between me and then Councilmember Christopher Crone and then Minority Councilmember, minority not in race but in terms of ideology, Mike Rotkin, who of course was usually the majority on the Santa Cruz City Council. This was one of the few times from 1998 through 2002 when he, well, 2000, which was when he ended his term at that particular time. But there was a so-called progressive majority that, of course, turned out not to be very progressive on homeless issues, police abuse issues, city council process issues, beach flats, Canfield Company issues. I don't know about development issues. I can't speak really to a lot of those. But in any case, this is all about the shoulder tap law, which I think became law, unless I'm missing something here, which is described in some detail by the opponent of the law, Christopher Krohn. Good for him. But Krohn was also under severe attack by myself and others for failing to stand up at city council as a strong voice against the sleeping ban, against police abuse, against, violence against homeless people and violence against demonstrators, where he was, you really see a pathetic spectacle of Krohn endlessly ducking issues, which he just sort of does so by going on. Well, you'll hear it. And I kind of apologize in advance for subjecting you to so much of this, but it has a historical value because Krohn is still, seen by some as, and certainly regards himself as, a community leader, in spite of the fact that he was, I think, improperly recalled after being censured by a right-wing activity or action on the city council. In 2020, 2019, thereabouts. Anyway, make what you can of this, and hopefully there'll be some more original material on Sunday, as well as usual, a better flashback. Thinking of getting a bit into the Ross Camp situation, the former homeless encampment that actually stood up for itself, got its own attorney, and fought back for a while, and the few on the council who sided with them. Anyway, that's not for today's show. That'll be for a future show. Or if you want to check it out, just check out the early shows of 2019, January, February, and March, which have a lot of that kind of discussion. If you go to the Huff website and look up the name of our show, Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. In the meantime, if you have more information about police misconduct, because there's a lot of police massing for not much reason, it appears, downtown. They seem to delight in drawing numbers of squad cars and cops to a minor instance, particularly those involving folks in ragged clothing. So it's unfortunately not much new, but something we should see as an old bad song that has to be stopped. So if you see anything, give a call to 831-423-4833. That's the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and also my phone. Or even better, take video of it yourself and post it online, and then let me know about it or let the community know about it, however you can.
Glad to have you with us, campers. It's 6 o'clock again, time for Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, Civil Rights for the Poor, here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. I'm your host for the next 2 hours, Robert Norse, and with me in the studio shortly, I've gotten confirming phone calls, will be two council members and one angry member of the public, council members Krohn and Rotkin, and the public's representative, Becky Johnson. You, of course, will be at the other end of the phone lines at 427-3772. That's our call-in line here at Free Radio. The subject, well, we're going to begin with shoulder tap. December 14th will be a second reading of an ordinance which makes it illegal for people to ask for a beer if you're a minor from an adult. Unfortunately, it sounds like our theme song has gotten a little slower over the years. Got to work on that tape. So, bear with us. We're going to begin by reading a letter from Robert Tarrant, attorney at law, critic of the proposed shoulder tap law, to Catherine Byers and other council members. Gomer Byers, writes Robert Karen, who's an ACLU-type person, I'm writing on behalf of the Santa Cruz County chapter of the ACLU in opposition to the proposed shoulder tap ordinance dealing with minor solicitation for alcoholic beverage purchases. If, in fact, there is a problem with young people purchasing alcoholic beverages, further criminalization of their acts will not help solve the problem. Youthful drinking should be addressed as a public health matter, not a criminal matter. The Santa Cruz ACLU believes that these matters are better addressed outside the criminal arena. In arresting an underage individual and putting him in the criminal justice system, the City Council starts an adversarial process that begins with advocates on both sides trying to prove or disprove a minor's acts. This is not going to help the problem. An attorney will do all he or she can do to fight against their client being stigmatized as a criminal. The adversarial nature of a juvenile court case will not solve the problem. If the City Council is truly concerned about minors and the use of alcohol, they should put their money into programs that concern alcohol misuse and abuse. The City Council should stop the trend of further criminalizing minors' actions and instead look at alternative approaches such as counseling, education, and social worker involvement to solve a problem rather than to add criminal sanctions to a youthful offender's acts. The ACLU of Santa Cruz believes this ordinance will do nothing to stop further minors' purchases of alcoholic beverages, and we believe the ordinance should be voted down. And there's a series of other letters from local civil liberties attorneys such as Ben Rice and Margaret Marr. And Becky Johnson did a show on this issue last night on Channel 71, which actually hasn't been aired yet. It was taped last night. Interviews with several youths on their view on the shoulder tap issue. And again, the shoulder tap law, you should understand exactly what it does. And I'm going to have to make sure that I have dredged up my copy of the law. I was sure I had one with me when I went to the studio. I've got to make sure it's in my bag here. It's a very brief law. It simply says, and it doesn't really clarify what the criminal penalties are going to be or how it's going to go, but it says that the act of asking an adult off-site an alcoholic an off-site selling area, so that is to say not inside a bar, but in some other area, will be criminal behavior. Just the act of a minor asking someone is itself a criminal behavior. One of the chief criminals is entering now, City Council member Christopher Krohn, back from Seattle. He was up there. I think he dodged the pepper spray and the rubber bullets, but can he dodge our spray and our live ammunition? We'll see. He's making himself comfortable in the studio. With him is his interlocutor, as we like to say here, Becky Johnson, who's going to be querying Chris on a number of issues. Let's give Chris a mic and make sure that this mic is attached. Let's see. Say something into the mic, Chris.
Hey, Robert.
A little louder.
Robert.
That's better.
Robert.
There you go. So welcome back. I see you have your Grand Bay Kite Company hat on there. Glad to have you with us. You look like you've been traveling. Maybe you even changed your clothes. That looks possible. Welcome back, Chris. You've seen a lot of police misconduct, I imagine, in the last couple of days. Is that fair to say? Or perhaps not.
Well, that's a long story, but...
What's the short version?
Well, I wouldn't mind talking a few minutes with you about this, since I am sort of fresh off the track from the WTO ministerials, as they call it up there.
Right. Let me say this. We actually have been getting phone calls from WTO protesters all day here at Free Radio, including people who have been pepper sprayed and jailed. I believe Jim Costner called in. Peter Lumsdane may have called it. Tom Shaver, of course, nose broken, eyes beaten. But, I mean, I'm more concerned, and I want to continue to focus on our local Santa Cruz situation, since we are going to be really covering the WTO in greater detail on other shows. But my concern is, has what you've seen up in Seattle had any impact on how you regard the situation here in Santa Cruz regarding the police? I know in a recent interview with John Malkin commenting on the May 22nd protest, you expressed admiration and satisfaction with police behavior on May 22nd based on what you, I guess, saw from the inside of the McPherson Center. This was on a show on Free Radio about 3 weeks ago. And, of course, the police in that incident did not actually physically beat up people, although, of course, Steve Argue was reportedly beaten about the body and pepper sprayed in the mouth. But do you think your perspective has changed at all about the Santa Cruz police and what you think needs to be done here based on what you've seen in Seattle?
Robert, it's very interesting to me that even on your own radio show, you're very similar at city council. I guess there's no differences. You know, you're at the city council. You're the same. It's the same thing. So I would love to talk about the WTO, but I'd like to begin at the beginning rather than just responding to different things, because I feel like I do actually have perspective and off the cuff sort of.
Right. You're on the air with me and Chris Crown and even Becky Johnson.
Hi. You know, I think that's a really valid question, actually, and I wish Chris would take the moment that it would take to answer that, please. That's my request. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was up the WTO as an official representative of the Santa Cruz City Council. We passed a resolution about 5 weeks ago, and just read a couple lines from it. And what the City Council, and it was a unanimous resolution. It was passed 7-0, which some people might be listening know that we don't have a whole lot of unanimity.
Chris, I got to tell you, my interest in the WTO is limited. I'm interested in
what is needed today are global rules to protect workers, communities, and the environment, is what the resolution says. Enunciate clear responsibilities for investors, create democratic accountability over capital.
Mm-hmm.
We call for a WTO based on these principles and upon our government on behalf of the American people in order to carry this banner in Seattle.
Chris, hang on a second. It's not that I don't want you to talk about these issues in some forum.
Further expansion of the powers of WTO to overrule the sovereign policies of nations, states, and local governments.
Chris,
be resolved, the city of Santa Cruz become a signatory of a statement of members of international.
This is what he does at City Council,
opposing
folks.
Opposing a millennium round or a new round of comprehensive trade negotiations.
Right, Chris.
So this is what the council passed.
Right, I'm not interested in what the council passed, Chris.
And
I'm interested in the question I put
Seattle,
to
you. Sort of bringing that voice from Santa Cruz.
Okay, I understand
in
that.
In official capacity.
Fine.
Up at the.
Did you see any instances of? Again, the question I had for you, Chris, was: did you see any instances of police misconduct that had any effect on you and your perspective here on the police in Santa Cruz? And please direct yourself to that question. Thanks. Go ahead.
I think also what this resolution covered was pretty much what folks were covering in Santa Cruz, at the Seattle protest. You know, there was environmental.
You're not dealing with the issue I'm trying to get you to deal with, Chris. Is this going to be your intention throughout this session? I thought we had a specific. Unless you're responsive to the questions, I mean, we have a problem here. I asked you a particular question.
I'm fairly excited about being back from the
and they're going to be
and I'm not excited and necessarily a joyful.
I'm glad you're excited. I mean, I'm glad you're concerned about issues up there. But I mean,
I'd love to talk about these issues.
Hey, the next talk show host would love to talk to you about those. I am here for a particular purpose with people who are going to be suffering regardless of what happens with the WTO in Santa Cruz in the next month because of city council action or inaction. I want to talk to you about that, and I want to talk to you about an issue that's coming up at City Council, the shoulder tab law, which you're going to be discussing with Mike Rotkin, hopefully, as well. Now,
I think the biggest thing I saw in Seattle was the...
Right, so you're going to ignore what I'm saying and proceed to talk about Seattle.
The presence of youth and the age group of 15 to 25.
Boy, I hate to be...
I really have a good feeling of, from that experience that young people, a lot of people think that folks are either apathetic or they're into...
Well, young people are going to be affected by the shoulder tab.
For these up in these WTO World Trade Organization.
Chris, we have limited time here. I don't want you to hijack the mic. I want you to respond to the questions if you can. It's not a forum for you to talk about the WTO per se. We arranged this whole session when you hadn't been going to the WTO. And there are a lot of people who are going to be talking to you about the WTO, and they're going to be talking to you on air about it because people are very interested in the WTO. But I'm interested in something else, and I would like you to, if you can, address yourself to those issues.
I was invited on the show to talk about shoulder tap.
That's correct.
And I'd be happy to talk about that. I thought it would be of interest to you, I think it is, anyway, from our past conversations, to talk about World Trade Organization. We were going to talk for an hour before Mike got here to talk about...
Right, we weren't going to talk about WTO. The other issues I'd like us to talk about are local ones, and the reason I think that it's important for me to do that is you are going to have plenty of radio time to talk about WTO and lots of forums. You've already had space in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and properly so. I am concerned about the issues that you're not going to be talking about because no one's going to be interested in asking you questions about it.
I haven't seen it.
Go read it, and we'll talk about that when you read the Sentinel, because what I want to talk to you about are issues. I guess Becky had a couple of questions for you here. Again, I'd like to see you. You saw the Seattle Police in action, did you not?
I saw there was a large different contingents. You know, you really have to start with. There was the Seattle Police Department. There
Did
was
you see
the
any
National
police?
Guard. There was the Sheriff's King County Sheriff's Department.
Don't go away. Did you see any police agencies acting in a fashion you considered inappropriate?
I think we all saw it on the news. I mean, the pictures I saw every newspaper in the country. Yeah, people were shooting canisters of tear gas in
right.
the face of protesters.
You're aware that,
sitting on
right, and using pepper spray directly on protesters. You're aware,
that's correct.
You're aware that Santa Cruz police have the option to use pepper spray and have used it on numerous occasions?
I'm not a big advocate of pepper spray.
Are you an advocate of, should we say, limiting the use of pepper spray on the police force? I know a lot of us hope you are.
Yeah.
Excellent. Here's a caller. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, this is the Vinny. This is the V-Man again. And no, of course, Chris Krohn wouldn't have an answer to either one of those questions because, A, in Seattle, he was holed up in his nice, comfy little hotel room or wherever he was. So he wasn't actually down in the streets with the people.
Insult people.
I don't mean to insult you, Chris, but you're totally ducking the issues. You're being asked pointed questions, and you're totally avoiding them.
I call the council office quite often, but I wish that you could leave a phone number because I'd like to talk to you, get back to you.
You know how to find me.
You leave these long.
If you really want to.
It's true. Vinny is a person.
And the second point is that, of course, he wouldn't have any idea about the Santa Cruz police either because he turned a blind eye to it when it was going down in his own city. And this is the last time I'm going to call.
Your response, Chris.
Again, the caller has called City Hall, and I don't really get...
Well, the question he asked.
What was the question?
The question was.
I didn't get the question.
Did he claimed you one? He said you were holed up in your hotel room, and so were not involved in protests on the streets. I have no idea whether you were or weren't.
I don't understand why.
In Seattle.
Why would he say that? Because I don't.
Well, he's asking the question. Were you or weren't you? Is the question he was asking. That was one of the questions. I mean, it's okay to be in your hotel room. I just wondered if you were.
Well, I didn't stay in a hotel, so I didn't really got that information.
Were you on the streets? Were you protesting? Were you out there on the streets?
I was in official capacity.
I understand.
On that respect, from the city of Santa Cruz, presented my resolution to many people up there who were very happy the city passed it.
You didn't get pepper spray.
Was I out in the streets?
Right.
Pepper spray, no. Tear gas, yeah.
Ah, you were tear gas.
There was many ways, you know. It's really difficult
it doesn't
to respond
matter.
To the caller because I'm not sure what the agenda is or where he's coming from. It's, you know, if you make accusations,
you're a council member. You're used to accusations.
He knows me, but he's sort of attacking me. And I'm saying,
he's concerned you weren't addressing the questions about local police
policy.
I'd love
to talk to him.
Maybe he can come into the studio and talk to you directly. That might happen.
If you want to talk to the 100 or so Santa Cruz folks, if any of them saw me up
actually,
there and where I was.
We can't deal with 100. We can only deal with one
now.
We have a caller.
Hi there, caller. You're on the air with Christopher Krohn and Robert Norris.
Yeah, who knows when these guys are going to get the balls to deal with the police. But at least the promise they made a year ago to do something about the sleeping ban, when are you going to repeal the sleeping ban?
There's a question for you. Chris, any thoughts on that one?
Well, you were around, David, when the sleeping ban came up the first time in this last past year and the many meetings that took place. And I personally didn't necessarily go along or feel good. I won't say go along. I feel good about the way it turned out. But I also think that you have 7 council members. I do think that we put it on the agenda. It was an agenda item that wouldn't have been there hadn't there been an election. And the repeal of the sleeping ban, I think, depends on where the homeless task force is going to go to and what recommendations get made to the council.
Actually,
I want to see people have a place to sleep. We know that you and I agree
Chris,
on a lot
on, hang on a second.
As far as a safe
hang
place
on,
to sleep. So we both agree, and I just want to answer the question, Robert.
Sure.
So we both agree on those, and I think a lot of other people do. I think also is educating a lot of other parts of Santa Cruz who we would like to bring on board, and I think that if you're looking for the city council necessarily to do what you just said, that might not be the place.
No, I think he's asking you if you are going to take action this winter to change the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance, when already your homeless issues task force over 2 months ago has called for the repeal of the entire camping ordinance. And I don't see, it seems disingenuous, Chris, for you to say you're waiting for the recommendations of the homeless issues. You know what the recommendation is. It was presented to City Council 2 weeks ago. Actually, it was more like 4 weeks ago. And it was passed the month previous to that. So what is this kind of talk? I mean, I can understand you're saying, well, I favor ending the sleeping ordinance, but I'm a minority on the council. That's a legitimate position. Are you saying you do or you don't favor it?
I think we spent a lot of time, Robert, talking about this issue. I think there's a lot of genuine concern on the part of council members.
What's your position, Chris? What's your position on this, please?
Well, my priority list is getting more beds for people to sleep in. I think that we definitely.
What about the 500 to 1,500 people outside? Should they be criminalized each night? Can you give me an answer?
We also need more shelter for women and
single moms. Should people be criminalized at night tonight while they're sleeping? Yes or no, please? Or maybe? Give me an answer to that.
Should people be criminalized?
Right. $54 fine. That's what your council, that's what you voted for in March of 1999 this spring. Should that fine retain it, should be retained, or should that be eliminated? Should people be able to sleep at night without being arrested?
Well, Robert, I could go back to those transcripts, and I wouldn't mind, you know, if you wanted to
Can you give me a yes or no answer on that one, Chris? I mean, have we reached the point where a year later you can't give me a simple answer to that question?
We talked extensively about this at the
time.
It's
sad.
And I also brought up about...
So wait a minute. So I feel that you probably do believe the sleeping ban should be repealed. I mean, but you're not saying so. So every time you evade the question, you let people believe that you don't believe that. Now, can't we get you to say that people should be allowed to sleep at night without being arrested somewhere?
I guess I think the question is, I've said this before on various occasions. Sure, I agree with you, but
right.
I'm trying to figure out what you want to hear, because I feel like you've asked me this question so many times and we've talked about it.
I want to hear a member of the city council standing up for basic human rights for homeless people in a public forum, like the radio station that we're on now. I'd like to see it at city council. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear it repeatedly until the council moves in that direction. And I think that when you made that very, very courageous stand, that's why you're here on the radio station today, Chris, around shoulder tap. You stood against the majority of the council. You were the only member of the council that voted in favor of what most of us feel is the appropriate position, not criminalizing young people, just like we don't want to criminalize homeless people. That's the reason that a lot of us voted for you and your fellow candidates. That's the hope we had that Catherine Byers that was sadly disappointed for throughout the last year. We have an incoming caller. Let's see what the caller says. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, yeah, I'm in your listening audience, and I had, a couple things to get out there on the air. First of all, in regards to just the nature of this entire conversation, it's sort of reminiscent of some of Michael Rockin's past appearances on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Is Mike in the studio, or is it just Chris?
No, that really is Chris. Mike is due in about 15 minutes. But
okay, well,
there's some who claim that
council,
you tend to go through that devolutionary process. We hope that's not true.
Well, let me just address Chris first. You are being very, very evasive, and I guess I do appreciate your, for lack of a better word, courage to come out on the air and, open yourself up to the poignant questions of Mr. Bathrobe's peers.
Mr. what?
Bathrobe's peers, the man seated next to you.
Yeah, I have my bathrobe with me at this time, I've got to point out.
But, I just think it reflects really poorly when people are asked direct, yes or no questions, and they want to start, looking at transcripts and this, that, or the other. But I don't want to dwell on that. I just want to kind of give my initial impression of, what I see as, your, for lack of a better word, your tactic this evening, which is just very evasive. And then back to the issue of the sleeping ban, my opinion is that, institutionally, whatever you want to call it, as a city government, you can either A, make things easier for people who are in dire straits to improve their lives, or B, you can make things more difficult. And the city council, the city of Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz Police Department have all opted for option B. They are going to make things more difficult for people who already have a lot of things that are very difficult in their lives to deal with. And it's essentially open the door for violence, for lots of things that people are not able to get recourse from. And in a sense, the people who are perpetrating the violence, I think, psychologically have a green light from the institutional structure of the city, because this is a very marginalized, oppressed you know, population. It's the whole question of, like, well, you know, in its benign majesty, the law, you know, forbids the rich man and the poor man alike from stealing bread, you know. And it's like, geez, here's a sleeping man. I'll get off the air because I could go on, you know.
Give me a question if you have a question for Mr.
Okay, my question is this. In your mind, what are the pick them, two, and if you want to expand to three, what are the two or three most crucial issues facing the city of Santa Cruz as we enter the new year? And the basis for that question is I read a quote from Keith Trigger in regards to the borders debate, that the soul of Santa Cruz was at stake, and that struck a chord in me as just being totally inflating the issue. And in my opinion, the soul of Santa Cruz is at stake on a large number of other issues. And I'm curious, you know, what you, Chris, think are maybe the two or three biggest that you'd like to see change and enacted. Thank you.
So the question is, what are the three biggest issues, Chris, if you can summarize them for us? And I know this is off the cuff. Go ahead.
And I hope people in the audience, and I'm not trying to defend myself. Well, I am. It's Robert. He's pinning me against the wall here. No, Robert, stop. I just got off the plane, you know, not more within the past hour and a half. And so, I appreciate. And I came here to talk about shoulder tap, and I didn't realize he was gonna. But this is fine, and I appreciate. Just as the caller said, that I came on the show.
Some sparring to warm up, Chris.
I also appreciate the questions. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. Well, there seems to be agendas and hidden agendas. But where I'm coming from is, I think as a city council member for 1 year now. And I didn't think I was going to do this before I did it either. It wasn't something I really wanted to do. In fact, I much prefer other people. In fact, people who know me know I went out and tried to get other people to run for this job. Politics has a lot to do with what I'm seeing on the council with personality. And I'm trying to address the caller's question here. I'm a teacher, you know, by training. You know, I've worked with high school students. I've worked with college students. It's probably one reason that I came out pretty strongly with the shoulder tap issue.
Give us three issues.
For positive,
quickly, Chris.
For good and bad reasons, I think when you're dealing with the sleeping ban issue, you know, you don't. I'm trying to be as honest with the caller as possible. How many people on the council have been homeless? You know, being that politics is a lot about is very personal
talking,
for people.
He's talking about your
and
issues.
I see a lot of people,
not the other council.
I see a lot of people
issues.
Also pursuing it. Well, one of the reasons I pursued shoulder tap is because I know something, and I'm not an expert, but I know something about the issues of young people, and I didn't think that was the place to begin.
Give us three issues quickly, if you can.
Well.
And if you don't have them ready, you can say you're not sure. That's also
no. I'd say certainly the issue of homeless people has to be one of those three issues. I mean, that has to be right up there. And so I want to point
homeless
that out
people
to,
is
the,
one.
To the caller. I also think the downtown plaza is a very big issue.
Downtown plaza.
And I'll just say quickly that it has to do a lot to do with social space and about, you know, a space for people who don't necessarily only want to go downtown and shop, but also it incorporates into the downtown. If you want to shop, you also have a place to rest. You also have a place for people to gather, for music to be played, that kind of thing. So that's going to be a big thing on my agenda this year.
Talking about the
another thing that I'm pursuing is an entertainment, some changing the entertainment ordinance. Currently, people pay between $800 and $1,200 if they want to have an entertainment permit in their cafe. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get that changed so that any club under 99 and doesn't charge admission, or under 100 people doesn't
that
charge
sounds
admission.
Like we got three issues here.
They then don't have to. Okay. Pay that inordinate fee because they only have music once in a while.
Okay, let me.
I did want to go back to what the other issue that you raised concerning Councilmember Sugar, because I think when he talked about the soul of Santa Cruz in the over the issue of whether a chain bookstore should move here or not, I think he very much spoke about social and economic issues. It wasn't just the economics of that issue, and that he was worried the soul of Santa Cruz is totally economic.
Let me interrupt you.
No, it had a lot to do
going
with
interrupt
social
you for a minute,
issues.
Chris. Hang on.
Well,
the reason I'm interrupting is I want to ask you about borders. There was some suggestion by those who still favor stopping borders that a second appeal by Coonerty around issues of parking and other things might successfully keep out borders. Any indication that that's happening as far as you know?
I haven't heard anything about it, and that's as of Tuesday.
Gotcha. We have an incoming call.
Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Yourself?
Good. Good. Thanks for having this program. It's really excellent.
Sure.
I actually wanted to address those top three priorities that Chris just mentioned. Mm-hmm. By the way, Chris, I voted for you. But I kind of, one of my major concerns is that I have a BA from UC Santa Cruz. I've been living in this community for 7 years, and I make $8 an hour, and I can't afford to live here. I wonder if you can speak to rent control issues
in Santa
Cruz.
Rent control has not been spoken to yet by Chris, as far as I know. Yeah, that's true. Even though there was an initiative on the ballot or that people tried to get on the ballot, and people diligently tried to get Chris's support on that issue without success so far.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm surprised that he hasn't taken a stronger stand on that, given his politics.
Right.
Or his politics that he says he has. But that was my question. That's it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Rent control, Chris, what do you think? Are you going to now hopefully introduce rent control at city council so we can actually give tenants some relief?
Definitely think tenants should get some relief. I'm not ready to introduce rent control, as you just said, Robert. I do think that the situation with renting is totally out of hand in Santa Cruz, and very difficult for people to find places.
You're on the air?
We do get calls all the time at city council, and I think this past effort, you know, didn't go the full distance, and I'm really sorry for that. And I've been around since the rent control issues in the late 70s, and I guess the last one was 82 or 83. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Right. This is a history that Rotkin will go through when he gets here, and I would hate to hear the Rotkin position coming out of the Crone perspective. Rotkin has said for years he won't introduce it because he doesn't feel the community will support it. There are a number of things I want to quickly.
Well, there's something to that, Robert, because I think that
there's something to council understanding up and acting as a lightning rod and supporting positions that need to be supported.
You're saying that council members just do this. I actually gave the council a really hard time by introducing shoulder tap ordinance because I thought, wow, they're about to pass a law that's going to affect people
that's the reason we're in the studio tonight.
So
I see where there's a lot of respect for your position.
At some point, Mike and I disagree on a lot of things, but at some
we'll
point I agree with
that.
Mike on the community has to lead on the issue.
Well,
now, the council doesn't necessarily, and we talked about this. The council is a reactive type of body.
I think we disagree on this issue. I think you have to lead if we are to believe you're a leader of any sort. And little cliches like when the people lead, the leaders will follow. I am really tired of hearing from you. But let me say this. Just a general picture. A year ago, you won a city council seat. I got a caller waiting on the line. I ask his indulgence briefly because I want to get this out before Mike gets here. The buyer's majority acted to save the Tidelands in the one issue that I think we saw where they stood up and opposed the city attorney. In every other single issue for the last year, there has been no significant opposition to the city attorney's positions, whether it be the confidentiality of the CPRB report, which he has suddenly stamped classified at birth, or other issues. So you got a biologist for the Parks District, the council got a biologist for the Parks District, a dietitian for the Homeless Services Center, and a redwood tree on Mission Street. Thank you very much. But my question to you is, what has this council done in the last year? I mean, I don't want to attack you per se. You're probably one of the best people on the council. The point is, you have to separate yourself from the council and say, it's not doing what it should be doing, and I think it should do this, and I'm going to support this, or else you will be attacked with the council. I have a caller on the line. I mean, you can respond to that.
Robert, if that's a question, I'd like
it
to respond, but if you don't want to respond,
sorry,
I won't.
Yeah, please respond briefly, and then I got the call. Then we have
a
strange new figure has just arrived in the studio.
Hey, Mike.
He didn't bring his motorcycle with him. Go ahead, please.
Not in the studio, though.
Not in the studio.
I think the right out of the chute, the new council passed, you know, to turn to reinvestigate the Tidelands issue, the river mouth parcels at the mouth of the
river. That
was
the only issue.
River.
The only issue.
This council, Robert, and the last council, to their credit, worked a lot on a skateboard park. We passed the skateboard park. It's coming. You just mentioned two or three positions. We also are going to hire, and I think Mike and I disagreed on this, was a grants writer position, somebody that's going to look for more money for the city on a lot of the different issues that we're concerned about. We got a staff ecologist. You know, we're in the hiring stages right now for that. We went through a lengthy budget process. Of course, probably a lot of new council members do it, but we to get up to speed, we worked with the finance director and other members of the community opportunity to try to really understand our city budget.
Right. Well,
I mean, and we asked a lot of questions in the budget sessions.
But there was no attempt to replace the city attorney, the city manager, or any of the significant city staff, which was, of course, a major focus of concern in the last election, a major concern that the council was itself being, to some extent, its position was being funneled and channeled and determined to some extent by how the staff presented and viewed things, and there was a conservative pro-development position.
I'd like to respond to your question. I think that you're talking about major decisions that take place in a city that you need.
Introduce our next guest, by the way. You got a mic. Introduce this man.
On board. And that's what you're not doing, I think, in a lot of the issues you're working on. You know, you got you build a constituency.
Okay. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Dan.
Yes, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. We're about to start the shoulder tap debate, so you can make a very brief statement, and away we go.
Okay. Well, of course, I'm against the shoulder tap thing, you know, because of harassment to young people, you know, that are gathered in two or three and considered, you know, either gangs or you know, thinking that just because they're standing around a liquor store or something that they're going to be asking for liquor and then asking them to leave, give them a ticket or whatever, you know. And on what you were talking about just a second ago was, you know, this borders debate and the homeless and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I found it really interesting that the very same people that caused all these big buildings to go into the mall here downtown are the very same people who are talking against borders. Yet why did they build all these big buildings, you know, and not expect big business?
We're going to leave it at that, Dan, because we've got to get to the shoulder tap debate, but thank you for calling in.
All right. Okay, bye.
It's a very good question, Dan.
Thank you. Yeah, Chris. Now, Chris.
But I have answers for you, too. I'd like to see the Cooper House, incidentally, is a very big building, which I agree with the sentiment that the buildings are too big, but there's four, as far as I know right now, four retail businesses planning on going in the ground floor of the Cooper House, and they're, as far as I know, too, they're local businesses. I think the same could have been replicated for the 1200 Pacific Avenue, the Red Tree property, as well.
Thank you, Chris.
I know that you and I disagree on borders, Dan.
In the studio with us now, and Chris, you can do the honors, is Councilmember Mike Rotkin. I'll let him share that mic with you.
Hi, thanks for inviting me on the show.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thanks for coming. As you can see, we have a busy phone here. We're gonna do this. Before we begin the debate, we're gonna have a couple of phone calls, and we're gonna give you like about a minute each to answer, so we can keep a series of calls going.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You have a minute to pose your question to our folks.
I was just wondering about information about the Vets Hall show.
About who?
The hip-hop show at the Vets Hall.
Hip-hop show at the Vets Hall is going to be December 2nd, 6 p.m. to midnight. That is, in fact, tonight.
Yeah.
So, you know, actually, there it's going on as we speak. Wander on down there, you know, donate some bucks to a free radio, and go to it, man.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
I guess that wasn't a question.
I haven't answered that question.
It was a good. It was an excellent promo. You guys are going to have to kind of share the mic, so one talks, the other. Anyway,
Mike, get your foot off my chest.
Yeah, right.
Who's that mic?
Now we're not going to have any shoving in the studio, gentlemen. Actually, they're behaving themselves like gentlemen. We have what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give each candidate, each member of the council.
Never a candidate again.
Never a candidate again. Actually, Mike is after 16 years of service. 17. That's correct. 1979. 17 years of service on the council. You're going to hang it up for at least a few years, right, Mike?
At least a few years.
Okay. And before that happens, you're going to protect the rights of young people, along with Chris, in an amazing transformation where you will support a civil rights-friendly alternative to shoulder tap. I know that. Well, that's going to come out of this discussion tonight. Anyway, how should we begin? Who wants to make an opening statement on the issue of shoulder tap? Let me, first of all, read the shoulder tap law. Do we have a copy of that law with us? I think it's right here. I'm going to read the shoulder tap law for those who haven't got it handy. This is the shoulder tap law, an ordinance of the City of Santa Cruz adding section 9.12.040 to the Santa Cruz Municipal Code pertaining to minor solicitation of alcoholic beverage purchases. Section 1, section such and such is hereby added to the Santa Cruz Municipal Code to be read as follows. Minor solicitation of alcoholic beverage purchases. A, it is unlawful for any minor, i.e. any person under 21, whether on public or private property, to solicit another person to purchase or to furnish an alcoholic beverage for the minor from an off-sale
alcohol retailer. B, the section shall not apply to a minor solicitation of another person for the purchase of an alcoholic beverage from an on-sale retailer, and mainly because there are already more severe penalties for that, I would imagine. And the section shall not apply to a minor's actual or attempted direct purchase of an alcoholic beverage from an alcohol retailer, again, because there are more severe existing penalties for that. These are, of course, provisions that in essence say, and I'd like either of the folks in the studio to contradict me if I'm wrong, if you ask another person to get you a beer and you are under 21, that becomes a crime. Is that accurate? At least an infraction crime.
If you ask another person in a public setting, which is what the law is about, in front of a 7-Eleven or a liquor store or something like that, if you ask your mom for...
Whether on public or private property, it says, to solicit another person, to solicit... I would say that wouldn't necessarily exclude asking your mom. I mean, I don't see... I mean, you scoff, but legally speaking, I don't see an exception here. Do you?
Well, I think there is an exception, but...
It's not certainly in the wording of the law. Chris... what do you think? Well, let's begin this. Let's begin by talking about the shoulder tap law. You're standing alone.
Easier for me to,
okay, go ahead.
Maybe be fairer and easier for. I mean, I'm open to having to go in either order, but for me to go first, since I'm the proponent of the thing, explain what it is, why it's happening, and then Christopher, who doesn't like it, I gather, can attack it and explain why.
Well, that's true, but I want to give Christopher the opportunity to make choices on this because it's a reasonable idea, Mike, but so often, you're, and it's a good idea, but here you are standing, alone against a tide of a council which says, here's a simple ordinance. It protects young people. It says that young people, alcohol is a deadly drug. It's the second largest killer in the country next to cigarettes. Maybe obesity is in there in between, but you don't find that many fat young people as far as I know. So the question I have for you is, what's the problem here? This is a law that simply gives the police another tool to deal with a very serious thing that is abused by a significant minority of young people.
Just to let you know, Robert, I do have to go at 7, and I spoke to you. So whatever happens around 7 o'clock, I'm not ducking out of...
Go ahead.
Before that. I come at this, and I explained a little bit before about where I was coming from. As a teacher, and I feel like I'm somewhat plugged into the young person community, although never enough. And I think that's where our society is actually breaking down, where we don't have the cross-generational, cross-talk communication that we really need. I think, as a council member, I would definitely have been, it came at us with very little information. I think since that time, we've gotten a lot more information out, and we've had a fuller discussion. But I was a little bit shell-shocked at the moment this, you receive your packet on Friday, at 5 o'clock or whenever they get to your house, and you have a council meeting on Tuesday, there's not many hours in between. All of a sudden, I saw this on the agenda, and I'm thinking, well, we're going to pass a law that we know very little. All we got was what you just read, and a couple paragraphs from our city attorney on this issue. And I was miffed, and I guess other council members felt the same way. Three other council members felt the same way. We voted to put it off to have that fuller discussion. I also might be able to want to entertain
you on
the shoulder tap.
Let me stop you on that point because I think that's important. Have you received any new information? Because Keith Sugar, our new mayor, asked that Steve Belcher, the chief of police, forward specific description of how this ordinance will operate. In other words, there's concern that it will criminalize young people. I mean, because it'll be an adversarial position, or else there'll be no opportunity for a young person to prove she or he is innocent. Now, have you had more information from Chief Belcher of either of you?
Right now, I just wanted to say before that because that's my second point.
I'm sorry.
Third point, but my second point is that I don't think we're doing enough right now for young people as a council, and I would be much more willing to entertain a law like this at some point in the future when I felt like we were really addressing issues such as youth centers, and I do say centers because we've had some input from young people that maybe one center will not suffice it or will not be sufficient, and also a youth commission. We did just pass, and I compliment Mike Rockin over here on the skate park issue and the work that he's done on that, and as well as we hopefully are going to have some more ball fields soon with the depot site, and I know Mike's done some work a bunch of work on that. So, I mean, there are some things that we're moving and doing for young people. I don't think we're doing enough. To answer the question that you're asking about, Robert, is show me the statistics. We haven't had those statistics. We don't know how many young people are picked up around liquor stores. At least I haven't seen those statistics they've been asked for. We don't know how many young people are actually picked up, or people, minors, people under 21 drinking. I haven't seen those either. I haven't been...
Have you seen any statistics on how the ordinance...
Say that this is,
have you seen stats on how the ordinance will
talk
operate?
Talk about why this is a major problem in the city of Santa Cruz.
Right. Have you seen any stats on how the ordinance will actually operate? In other words, the actual process by which...
we had one reading of the ordinance. It was voted by the council 6-1.
Mm-hmm.
6 votes in favor of passing it, 1 against. We will have a second reading. At that time, council members can change their vote.
Right, I understand that. But I'm saying...
Council Member Sugar asked the police chief to come back with statistics.
I haven't seen
the statistics yet.
We asked the police department yesterday to forward any information. They haven't done so. We asked the mayor to... Catherine Byers, as of yesterday, had received no information from the police department, and Keith Sugar was requested to let us know if he'd received any. He hasn't called in. Mike, have you heard anything new from the police department on how this... Or perhaps you can tell us how the ordinance will operate, since you're going to be voting on it, and in fact, you already have voted on it on one reading.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's exactly where I'd like to start, but I'll be happy to...
Remember, you will have a half an hour later after this, or at least part of a half an hour.
Well, let me take not more than 5 minutes and tell me when my time's up.
Take
reasonable.
Take about 3 minutes, if you can.
3 minutes is fine. Basically, this ordinance came to us, I was in the same position as Christopher and others. I wasn't one of the people that brought it to the city council, so I got it on the same Friday as everybody else
did. Chief Belcher, right?
And for me, it was not a difficult question about supporting it. We have a huge amount of evidence that shoulder tapping is the major way that young people get access to alcohol. That's been revealed in a number of studies done by the United Way and other groups, that self-reporting by teenagers, where do you get alcohol, by shoulder tapping people at these kinds of stores.
By asking somebody. Yeah.
Asking someone to get it for them, and usually paying someone. In other words, you find somebody often, I mean, just by, this is anecdotal, but from my own observations and stuff, you get somebody who's got a problem, an adult who has a problem with alcohol, you offer them $10, and they get to keep $5, and they bring you back alcohol.
Which is currently a crime.
For them, for the adult that does it, yes.
No, it's a crime to purchase through a second, third person. And that is currently a crime.
Well, that's exactly what's going on in terms of this situation most commonly. And from my perspective, there was, again, to take 30 seconds of my 3 minutes, there was a time when families were intact in the United States, when there was no reason for government regulation dealing with young people because there were extended families, people look after their kids. You didn't need the government or the state or the city or anybody else to step in and tell people, you know, here's some protective legislation, here's things to look out for. Kids, we didn't even have to have child labor laws because kids lived on farms and their labor was regulated by their parents. That, we're a long ways away from that. We're in a situation now where the family in the United States has, you know, fallen apart almost completely for many, many children. Young people, not just children, but young people, and for their parents as well. And it's often the case that nobody's minding the store. Parents don't know what their kids are doing in the evening. People don't have control over what goes on. And we end up in a situation where the government, that's to say the city in this case, finds itself providing kids with recreation, which they never used to have to do, where we end up providing kids with education, which used to happen to the family and hasn't happened for 200 years. Give me my 3 minutes, Robert.
I am. You got 1 minute.
Yeah, thank you. And then... And so there's a whole series of laws that we've passed about alcohol. We decided that it's, you know, not in the interest of young people to have legal access to it. We passed these laws. They include things like you can't go into a bar and solicit a drink. You can't buy it yourself if you're a young person. One of the loopholes in the existing set of laws is that there's nothing that makes it illegal for a young person to go up and ask somebody else to buy alcohol for them. But it's illegal for the person that buys it, but not for the young person. It's a small loophole. To me, it's not a really big deal. I probably will end up, I agree with, and it'll become clear that Christopher and I agree completely, that we shouldn't be passing laws like this in the absence of doing positive things for young people. It's not a matter of just passing sanctions against them. We need to have more social services. We need to have youth clubs. We need to more kinds of things going on for people. And this is, to me, a small ordinance. It makes sense. I don't know why we would not want to sort of sanction people doing this. And I'll be happy to answer the other question you asked, but I'll give you a chance to comment about this issue of how will the law actually
Time's
work.
Time's up. And these are points that you have made at council meetings, as Chris has made his points. But, of course, the key question here and the constant refrain that this is some kind of a loophole ignores the fact that it's a criminal behavior for a young person to get an adult to purchase alcohol for him. That is, you're soliciting somebody else to assist you in a crime. It's illegal to possess possess it yourself. It's illegal to buy it yourself. It's illegal for you to be the activating person that goes and gets somebody else to do it. I mean, I assume you know that.
Robert, if that were the case, this would be a redundant law and not worth your time. There's bigger things to do in life. So why are you so concerned about it? Let me ask you.
Why am I so concerned about it?
Yeah.
Now, so you're claiming that that's not the case? It's not illegal for a minor to get somebody else to get him to purchase alcohol once the alcohol reaches him? That is illegal.
It's illegal to possess the alcohol. It's not illegal to ask someone to go get it for you.
No, it's not illegal to make the request. But once you get the request fulfilled, that is a crime itself, independent of the possession.
Yes, that's true.
So what I'm saying is,
the loophole is that it's not illegal to ask the person to go get the alcohol for you. It's a small loophole. It's a trivial loophole from my point of view. There are a whole lot of issues like Proposition 21 that's coming up on the ballot that have to do with threatening to punish young people as adults.
Right.
And issues that deserve our attention that are terribly repressive of young people. And we should be addressing our attention.
Okay, let's give Chris a minute.
Not trivial things like the small loophole we're closing to this law. That's my view.
Okay, Chris.
I just want to reiterate that Proposition 21 that Mike just talked about, because people should go out and know about that.
Right, it's an important issue. But since you're all going to agree on it, I don't think we need to talk about it a great length here.
I want to mention it to your listeners.
Right, and I think that's important. That'll be on another show. But what I'm saying here is this is an issue that I think is significant because it's being misrepresented.
What I wanted to talk about with Mike is what precludes, law in place stops adults from being able to talk to young people. I mean, because it's... ask me to buy alcohol, I try to have a conversation with them and say, you know, you're putting me at risk, you put yourself at risk. I mean, what's going on here?
That's a good
point. Why
are you
doing that?
That's a good point. But before we go into that...
It stops that kind of conversation.
Before we go into that, Chris, I want to point out this constant refrain that there's a loophole, that it is somehow illegal. It is not illegal for someone to ask someone to get alcohol if that results in alcohol getting to that person. Is not true. It is illegal for me as a minor to solicit alcohol if that solicitation results in a purchase. That is illegal at the current time.
As far as I know, that was included, I think, in what we...
Am I wrong about this? I don't think so.
And he also included cigarettes on there.
Right.
It's not currently illegal to ask someone to buy you cigarettes, although there is a law that exists about concerning drugs that it's illegal to ask somebody to buy you drugs.
It's not the asking. Well, let me clarify this. It's not asking that is illegal. It is getting the person to do it.
Yeah, that's illegal.
That is illegal at the present time.
That's what I'm
saying. It is illegal
to
secure that.
It's illegal to ask.
Right. The act of speech becomes illegal. An act of one person speaking to another and saying, will you get me a beer? If I say that to my college roommate, he's 21 and I'm 20, that becomes illegal under this code. Now, Mike, you're scoffing. That won't ever be enforced, you say.
That example you gave will never be enforced.
You're saying that will never be enforced. Even if, let's say, a third person who doesn't like either of them, or if there's somebody with a grudge who wants to say that's a crime and gets pissed and decides he wants to report it as an infraction crime.
The police wouldn't even show up for the call, Robert. Get real.
It would be illegal. It would be illegal behavior. We have an incoming call here, though.
I think just quickly, the thing to say is that about this is, in the example, I mean, it's a small point you're making. I think it's a small point. The difference between whether you have the right to ask them to get you the stuff or whether you're going to, it becomes illegal only after they bring it back to you and you then possess it. And my point would be, so you can stand out there in front of a liquor store, you can keep asking a series of people to buy you alcohol, they keep saying no or shining you on or whatever, until eventually you can persuade someone to do it, then you've broken the law. And I think the problem is we need to be clear with young people that standing in front of liquor stores or 7-Elevens and asking people to get you booze is not itself an acceptable behavior. It should be an illegal behavior. The consequence for it is an infraction, which I'll be happy to talk about when we get a chance. I'll wait till Christopher goes, if you like, but explain exactly how this law will operate if, in fact, anybody is ever arrested under it, cited under it, I guess, not arrested.
I've got a caller here for the moment, though. Caller, what's up?
Yeah, I think it's a very unhealthy law that arises out of fear of intimidation. I think a societal response should be that the adults respond to that intimidation, but they don't create laws and criminalize the youth. To create laws out of fear of youth and to perpetuate that whole cycle of fear of youth and fear of and the boogeyman, I think is a real bad way for law to go, and that's the way we've been going for far too long.
Chris, any comment on that? And on what Mike has said.
Again, I'll go back to, I think it precludes a conversation between adult mentors and young people, and I just don't think it's the way to go. It also has the opportunity, or takes, you know, puts a young person in the criminal, it looks on them as a criminal, and I think that getting them in a system that then sort of, you know,
is not, I don't think it's positive. I don't think it's positive to have that involvement at that level. If you're telling me that maybe someone who's a trained counselor was going to apprehend or at least confront the person who's asking for alcohol, I might be more willing to vote for it because I think they would get some direct counseling. But I think once you put, you know, I think our police officers, they do a lot of things and they're trained in a lot of areas, but I don't think they're necessarily counselors, although they're called upon at times to be like that, but I don't think they necessarily want to do that. And I think we need a lot to focus a lot more on the counseling aspect of this.
Right. Now, another criticism I've heard, and I am, of course, an opponent of this law. Obviously, I'm not impartial here, clearly. And that's okay, because most of the council favors the law, and I feel that, you know, it looks like a done deal to me at the moment. But still, the issue is really an important one. Here's Police Chief Steve Belcher coming in with his law, as like a year ago he came in with criminalized being on the river banks of the San Lorenzo, and 2 years ago he came in with a youth curfew, and wham bam, it's a slam dunk for the Santa Cruz City Council. Even though he doesn't present stats about criminal behavior, he was asked about criminal behavior on the San Lorenzo River. He had no clear stats. I was at those council meetings. I heard anecdotal information. Now it is illegal for a couple to walk along the San Lorenzo River after dark. That's criminal behavior for adults. Now, what's happening here is, even though it's illegal for a youth to say, I want to buy a beer, go get me a beer, and the minute somebody goes in and gets a beer for that person, that becomes a crime. But it's not a crime for it to say, get me a beer. That, at the moment, it seems a clear civil liberties issue to me that a person has a right to say, can you get me a beer? I mean, even if it's not a good idea, I don't think it's a hot plan to do, but...
The stats issue is, because it's another question I had from Mike from what he said before.
Right.
I have not seen any statistics on this whole shoulder tap thing, and Mike cited a United Way study, and I would be happy to look at that. It wasn't included in our pack, and I didn't know anything about it. I do know that there's a lot of anecdotal information out there on several sides of this issue, and I do want to say that the person that the city's relying on statistically, and at least to give some intellectual sort of the white paper on how we should address alcohol and teen issues was given to us, and he in fact says that we shouldn't, you know, that shoulder tap should not be a priority, that passing an ordinance such as this should not be a priority.
You're referring to what's his name?
His name is James.
He was referred to in the four-page staff report that City Council. You may remember his name, Mike. He was in that report. That's the letter. We have the staff report.
I just thought it was interesting that we received information. The only information we, in the end, received concerning this issue that I can recall. Mike might recall something else that was in our packet, but I actually called this person. He lives locally. He's a nationally known person who does consult with cities on issues of alcohol.
What did he tell you?
And I only talked to his answering machine, and then he left an answering machine message back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that this is, in fact, a low priority. He doesn't understand why the police were using his name and his information concerning this issue, because they knew, according to him, that he was not recommending that. He wasn't recommending a shoulder tap ordinance.
Have you received any information from Chief Belcher about how this ordinance will be implemented? That's because that, to me, is really a key issue.
I can talk about that. I do want to say, again, the issue here of how likely it is in terms of high priority, this is not my highest priority either. I assume this would be a 15-minute discussion, passed on a first reading, passed on a second, and done with, and we'd put our energy into much bigger kinds of questions. That Christopher already mentioned the teen center, which takes, you know, we have money for it, but a location to place it, perhaps more centers, like he said. The way this law would work, just to sort of lay this out as I understand it, and this is not something that was in our packet, but something that if we've been following, and to be fair to Christopher, he's new to the city council, but the way that our criminal justice system handles young people generally is that when young people get cited with infractions, as this would be, they basically are entered into the criminal justice system. And if your view is anything in the criminal justice system is evil, bad, and nasty, and once a person's caught up in it, their whole life turns to shit, then, you know, then you have a problem with this. But in fact, what happens is they get put on the juvenile probation list. That's where it goes from this. The police officer doesn't do the counseling with them, except if he maybe talks to them.
Even if they're found guilty.
if in fact they're found, you know, the point is it starts a process in the juvenile
system. But it starts initially an adversarial process in court unless he pleads guilty of the crime, right?
Although in juvenile court, the system is not as simply adversarial as it is in adult court.
Maybe you can tell us.
I've been to juvenile court.
Tell me about juvenile court because I haven't been to them. I've been on the outskirts of it.
It's a much more, the process, the whole goal is rather than simply like, you know, the prosecution versus the defense and we're going to see who's got the evidence, you know, where it weighs in terms of things. Basically, the court's goal is to try and figure out what's in the best interest of the young person that's in front of the
court. But there's still a question of guilt or innocence.
Yes, there's still a question of guilt and innocence, but there's a whole lot more background work done by probation before they ever get there. And people try and figure out what's the nature of this case, how serious is it, what should happen. And
is there background by probation before the crime is determined to be a conviction?
Just as there would normally be, but in other words, someone has to look into this question and figure out, gather information about what's gone on with the thing. They look at the police thing, they look if there's problems in the family and so forth. Juvenile justice system is very different than adult.
So in other words, there's a probation report prior to whether there's a conviction on a crime?
Yes.
So that is a definite distinction from the adult system.
Yeah, it's a completely different system because, again, in adult court, the goal is either you're innocent or you're guilty. With juveniles, the question is more, what's the problem here? How can we address it in some way? And, of course, ultimately, there's an issue of innocence or guilt that needs to be determined.
Now, I see a retired police officer in the back here who's kind of nodding.
Nodding yes or no. I don't know.
He seems to have had some experience. We're talking, Mike Smith is also in the studio, who is, again, opposed, I believe, to the shoulder tap law. But you've had some experience in juvenile court. Is that accurate to say? Can we... Grab that.
Yes, it is. For over 27 years, I worked at Juvenile Hall in San Jose, so went before cases in court very often.
Uh-huh.
And Mike is very correct. It's very different from the adult system in that when a child comes in, there's a period of time before they go before a judge in which a probation officer investigates the home, investigates what alternatives may be represented to the court or presented to the court regarding the child, and in the best interest of the child, as Mike says, as opposed to the adult system.
Well, wouldn't this protect the youth? And should we be concerned about an adversarial situation, as Robert Caron for the ACLU says locally? I mean, isn't that taken care of, as Mike is suggesting? Right, although we want to give Chris a chance because he's got 6 minutes left.
I'll just be really quick. The vast majority of these cases would never go in front of a judge. In the vast majority of cases, there would be some that the youth would end up saying, yeah, I did it. They would not be some penalty other than often they make them write an essay about what they did and, you know, whether that's not appropriate behavior. They need to, sometimes they set up arrangements where they have to check in regularly with a counselor from probation. Other times, I mean, most of the stuff is non. It's not like they go to jail or a juvenile hall or any kind, or even to a formal court hearing of some kind. They make an informal arrangement, and oftentimes.
But that can happen. Any of those things can happen.
It can happen in these cases,
correct,
if things move to that direction. But more often than not, in the vast majority of these cases, what's going to happen is there'll be some kind of a, if you like this word, a sentence will be determined before there's a formal hearing, simply by agreement between the youth or his parents and the juvenile system, in which they work out something that's going to try and make sure that this stuff doesn't happen again.
Chris, have you had experience in this yourself? Maybe we're going to ask Mike because he's been involved in juvenile court.
So I think that's basically, people have to understand that.
The
this
other
does
Mike.
Not always lead to a hearing. Like typically an adult gets arrested, you're going to court.
I understand. But let's see what does actually happen in the juvenile system.
With an infraction, I think Mike's basically correct that it would unlikely that the child would end up staying in juvenile hall, would go to a foster home, would go to another type of institution, and so forth. But what it does is enter that as part of a juvenile record, nonetheless. Once they are admitted to juvenile hall, is part of a juvenile record, basically.
Now, is that?
But my concern, Mike, is there is that possibility. I do not see any preclusion or exclusion in this law that says it will only be handled out of the juvenile justice system and outside of juvenile hall. I think there is every possibility that it could be handled in juvenile hall, although it may infrequently or may never be in some cases.
Christopher here. I think there's too many unknowns in this whole thing. And, I mean, a couple of questions that come immediately to my mind is, what if the parents aren't home when the child is arrested? What if they're on probation? That was never answered for me. If they've already got a prior, I think something like this, I was told by two different lawyers that they could be sent back to juvenile hall if they're on probation when they're arrested for the shoulder tap ordinance. Again, I think it puts a tremendous stigma on a young person, given how alcohol is looked at in our society. And again, I want to say that I do think there's some major problems with alcohol in our society. I don't think passing yet another law is the way to address it. I do think we should go toward social service programs, more counseling. That in that area, I don't think passing this law is going to be all that helpful. And I hope that we get some answers to some of these questions. There are some people in the community who spend a lot of time looking at this. I'm thinking of Margaret Marf, one person who's a lawyer. I'm thinking of Robert Terran, who wrote a letter
earlier
to the ACLU about this issue. I'm thinking of Ben Rice, who also wrote a letter. All of them, you know, said this is not something we should be passing.
But also Jim Mosher, the man you mentioned, who was actually wrote the main staff report city attorney did as well.
Said to target adult suppliers of alcohol, commercial and non-commercial, meaning someone who would buy it for you and person who would sell it to you at a commercial establishment, and that's what you're supposed to be targeting. This, you know, you shouldn't necessarily expend police resources on something of this nature, and that's another unknown. And Mike and I might disagree, and I don't know if we even have any statistics on it. He's going to say maybe because we haven't done it
yet.
We're
going to talk to him in a moment because you've got to leave shortly.
Is this going to take out of the police department?
Have we got stats on that?
On this? Well, we don't have stats on it currently because we're not doing that and targeting that, but we do have police officers who do work with sort of the juvenile area and look at what young people are doing and mm-hmm. you know, make the bus.
Well, the question I have here is it's one I've forgotten, but why don't you make your last points,
well,
because you're running out of time.
Stigmatization.
Unless you want to stay longer.
Being involved with the system, I don't think is cut and dry as Mike says. I think that it has done. It's a very difficult issue when you're arrested, and you have to go to, you know, either home. In this case, they're saying taking someone home. You could also go to juvenile halls, I understand, too, in the worst case scenario, although that's not what they're going to do to kids if they are apprehended in front of liquor stores. I also think there's a selective prosecution thing going on here, too, that people, everybody, I go past Benicio's, for example, on Pacific Avenue. Everybody hanging out there is not necessarily looking for alcohol. It is a cool place to hang out. I personally don't find it a cool place to hang out. I wish it wasn't a cool place to hang out, but for some young people, it is a cool place to hang out, and until we have other cool places to hang out, people will continue
that brings me to the
hang
question
out
I have
at places
for you.
Like, you know, and I think everybody's on the council one time or another has, you know, not expressed something, a negative view toward the couple liquor stores that we have around downtown.
The people that are pressing this issue, you know, are law enforcement, and I also wonder if it isn't sort of a stay-away kind of device for liquor stores and stores that sell liquor to get rid of young people from in front of their stores. I mean, isn't this to some extent part of the motivation? This is one of the concerns I've heard expressed.
I think that's
youth
an issue.
Removal ordinance. Sort of,
155 young people from Santa Cruz High School signed a petition that expressed something like that sentiment as well. And I think that it is. It could be used as a move along. A couple of the lawyers who wrote letters also expressed that. I think that, you know, maybe Mike knows too. And a question for him would be, how actually did this get in the process? Get in the hopper? How did it come to us?
And we're going to ask him that in the next half hour.
Two council members, not Mike or myself, brought this forward, but I don't know what the origins of it were, and with those origins, why didn't the person who originated it also bring some statistics? Because I've only had anecdotal stuff, and I'd love to see the statistics, because I do think alcohol is a major problem. Is this the area we should be targeting? I'm not sure.
Before you go, we have in the studio with us Becky Johnson, who last night did a show on this for community television, and she's been kind of monitoring what's been going on. Becky, do you have any questions you want to put to Chris before I go, since you're going to have an opportunity to rake Mike here over the coals shortly?
I'm just looking at some of these letters that Chris made reference to. Here's a one from Margaret Marr, and she said, treating young people as criminals only encourages them to become criminals. And she says, thus once... if a juvenile is housed in a juvenile criminal facility, young people are enormously likely to reoffend. What would you say about that? That this is treating young people like criminals for something that, like Mike Rotkin says, is very minor. But you know, a young person who's cited may consider, and their parents may consider this very a major event in their lives.
I think that it's not surprising that civil liberties lawyers, Margaret Marr, Ben Rice, and Bob Terran, think that, you know, any infringement on people's individual liberties, any contact with the criminal justice system is bad and should be avoided. But if you talk to the people who actually have social service responsibility for young people, Terry Moriarty, who runs the youth services program, not just police, and who's not a police officer, but actually works on social service programs, or other folks that do that kind of work, they have a very different attitude to the criminal justice system as it applies to young people, the juvenile justice system, that it's not the stigma of it, it's the fact that somebody actually pays attention to what's going on. And again, if we had individual families that all knew what their kids were doing and took care of all these problems, there wouldn't be a need for any of these kinds of laws. But that's not what exists. And so their argument is that when you get somebody, quote, in the criminal justice system, it is not the beginning of some, like, path to hell. It's the beginning of a process of getting some kind of a wake-up call, where you meet with a counselor, where somebody suggests to you that maybe this is not the best way to go. And I want to really be clear about this. I don't think this needs to be targeted as the big problem in terms of this little loophole. It's a small little piece of what needs to happen. I didn't think we should put major kinds of attention. I think both people who are concerned about the criminalization of young people should put their major energy not into opposing this little thing, but dealing with Prop 21, which is a big, nasty problem. And the people who are in favor of trying to solve the problem of alcohol should, as I probably Christopher and I agree on this, put most of their energy into providing positive alternatives for young people. And certainly the police are not going to make this their major area of enforcement. They're going to continue to deal with busting the bars that actually serve people and the stores that sell alcohol to minors.
Politically speaking, Mike, this is sort of, you know, a liberal, you know, left-of-center community. This doesn't seem like a left-of-center issue. And in the sense of, when you say there's a loophole being closed here, no other community in California has this law, at least to our city attorney's knowledge. Some of them were surprised when he called around and found out that they didn't have that law, or that law didn't exist anywhere else.
What's that loophole?
Or that, that there was the loophole. But I don't see it as a loophole. That's Mike's word. But I'm just wondering why Santa Cruz, why now... As you expressed, there's other ways, there's other problems that we need to put more emphasis on. Why are we going ahead and doing this? Because I just feel like the carrot and the stick, we're giving the stick more often than we're giving a carrot to our young people.
Keep the mic for the moment, because Mike is going to be... Keep the mic. Because Mike, you're going to be talking about this issue at length in the next half hour, and you've got to go very shortly, Chris. The question I guess I have is, since there are no stats that have been presented by by Chief Belcher on the current situation, I mean, it seems to me it's a police theory about how to deal with this problem. You don't have any evidence from other jurisdictions. Mosher, the guy who they're relying on as their expert, says he doesn't think it's a particular... There's no indication that it works. So the question is, what's the point? Maybe it's a propaganda exercise, sort of like saying, we oppose drinking. If you stand outside and ask these questions, it's not acceptable behavior. Sort of, maybe that's what we're talking about, some sort of feel-good kind of comment along that line. Why do you feel so strongly, Chris, that you're willing to put the kind of... You spent a couple hours in the last two council meetings running through very specific concerns about why this should not become law. And you still feel that way, I imagine. Has anything you heard changed your mind? Have you received any news from Chief Belcher? Any arguments from Mike Rotkin here that have made you feel... I mean, Terry Moriarty favors it. Doesn't that persuade you that it's a social service benefit?
I would say that Terry Moriarty made some good points, and I respect his work. We disagree on this particular issue, although I think Terry also expressed at that time that this was not something that should be a priority necessarily when doling out the resources in the area of criminal justice.
Also, I mean, some people are saying, well, gosh, the city council went to the Santa Cruz High School to ask. Of course, they didn't go. I know it was stuff to the university, where they probably would have been stoned off the campus for bringing up such a regulation, and articulately stoned off the campus. And they also held their session 2.5 hours after the school day had ended, so most students were not available for that. But
that was not intentional.
Conspiracy.
Well, yeah, but it certainly wasn't very well planned. Let me put it that way.
Although I will say, for the young people's part, we did have 60 to 70 young people there out of in a meeting of probably 120 people altogether attended.
20 police officers in plain clothes, I know, interestingly enough. But what I'm wondering is, the students overwhelmingly said, we don't want this law. And I'm not saying that they necessarily should be the determining factor, but don't you want to go to people who are students? And I don't mean students who are the apple polishers, who are the few students who were clearly working closely with the police department who favored the law. Most of them opposed it. And most of the people, I guess Becky Johnson here went on campus and talked to students and tried to get some indication of who favored it. And Mike, maybe when in your half hour, I want to talk to you about the contacts you've had with young people and their opinions. Because certainly, though they're not the experts, they don't have all the wisdom, but they have some of it. And they know how students operate with each other, how peer group pressure works, and whether this is a good idea. Is one of the main reasons you continue to oppose this because youths obviously overwhelmingly oppose it?
That's a major issue for me, is that we need to listen to young people more than we do right now. And I do think that there's a lot of wisdom not only in our older folks but also in our younger folks, and I think we need to bring that wisdom together. I think I disagree with Mike on the issue of the civil liberties lawyers who just think that no one should get involved with the criminal justice system. I know a few lawyers who are civil libertarians. They have friends within the criminal justice system who are law enforcement people. They don't necessarily think that the legal system the police are evil or the courts are evil. And I think Bob Tarrant expressed that you bring these young people, if you bring them in to the criminal justice system, you have a sense of that you're bringing them into something they might not necessarily need to be brought into. And that's obviously against his livelihood, because maybe the more people who are brought into the criminal justice system, the more casework he might have, or lawyers might have.
Is there a financial kicker here? When Sheriff Mark Tracy went for the county youth curfew in 95 or 96, there was a huge federal grant of money involved in doing this. Is there any money involved in this kind of proposition?
Not that I know of right now.
The police department isn't going to get any benefits of this federally. Are they going to get some indication that they're helping the youth?
I think there's an idea of possibly there'll be a decoy program and then grants will be forthcoming, but that has not been talked about. That's only been speculated upon by members of the community.
I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but you know, but the police department is, you know,
you're a conspiracy theorist?
Certainly not.
It has to be a conspiracy based on no facts.
That would be
a groundless conspiracy theorist, for heaven's sake. We're on the second floor.
Robert, I have to go, but I really appreciate being on your show, and
Chris, we appreciate your coming. I want to encourage you again to speak out on other issues as you have been willing to speak out on this issue. Mike, I tend to, in a way, I kind of agree with Mike that a lot of time and energy has been spent on this issue, that I would like to see you apportioning some of your energy on other issues, like the Dolphin Lee issue, like the issue of immediate homeless shelter. We've had 3 beatings in the last 3 weeks of homeless people, verified beatings by the Homeless Services Center, and probably more. We have a situation where the shelter is at 90% capacity, and according to Ken Cole, will be full, and you're going to have a situation where people are going to get ticketed outside.
Well, that's your guess, get the last word.
So what I'm saying here is, thank you, Mike. I appreciate your opportunities. Mike has always got a free word here for us.
Have him leave and give him a speech. You know?
No, the reason I'm giving you a speech is I really think a lot of us who are listening want you to speak out on other issues as well, the way you've spoken out on this issue.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate your support.
And try avoiding that pepper spray and those bullets. And we were going to send Officer Lefevre up to save you and Sophie from the mob of up there, but we decided against it.
I hope people know that Robert wouldn't let me talk about the World Trade Organization protests.
I successfully muzzled this man. I want you to know that.
He just cut me off.
My God.
And there was definite censorship, and I'm calling the FCC right now.
Get the gag. Thank you, Chris. So you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Cruise, 96.3 FM. It's the changing of the guard. Becky Johnson is going to take over the position of Chris Krohn. Thanks, Chris. We have in the studio here at 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, Councilmember Mike Rotkin. You love to hate him. And Becky Johnson, that video journalist, producer, and the person who actually has been doing a lot of lobbying around the issue of shoulder tap, I should say against shoulder tap. What I'm going to do now is remind all you people out there that there is an open line, and is this issue so irrelevant that we're going to have nobody calling in for the next 25 minutes? We've had no calls for the last 20 minutes. 427-3772 is the phone number, so please, 427-3772, if you think... Ha! Well done. If you think that this this deserves your interest, call in, and here's a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. Yeah, I think this whole debate is really ridiculous. I think that it's pretty obvious that creating more laws to incarcerate our youth is just going to create more criminals. It's been shown. I mean, it's really ridiculous. It's like especially in Santa Cruz where we choose what. Who and what to look, you know, look at as far as, I mean, you go by that Metro wall, it's like, you know, they're you know, dealing drugs and stuff, which I don't care, you know, one way or the other, like, I'm not, this isn't about this drug thing, but I mean, and then they're gonna, like, do a program for this alcohol thing. It's just total,
Well, caller, are you a youth yourself? Are you like, will you be criminalized under this ordinance if you ask somebody to get you booze?
No, but like 80% of my friends would be.
Well, don't you think, I mean, don't you have some alcoholic friends? Aren't you concerned that they need to be deterred from, you know, a bad course of behavior, purchasing liquor? You could say no or yes. Whatever.
No, I don't think that's the way to deter. And I think that programs like youth services, definitely like having clean and sober high schools or whatnot, is definitely the way to go. And I've seen many more kids get sober through programs like that than through incarceration.
Well, remember, we're being told by Mike Rotkin and to some extent by Chief Belcher, although, again, it is rather vague what the actual process is. We haven't got any stats, and I think even Mike will agree with us on that, that, you know, incarceration will not be a major component of this program. Instead, it's going to be writing, I will not drink 60 times on the blackboard, or an essay, perhaps, or, I don't know, cleaning the graffiti off the San Lorenzo Bridge. I mean, I'm not quite sure what they would do.
What about what's in place right now with the whole you lose your license? That is the whole start of how people get incarcerated. They lose their license, right? And then, you know, it's like you're going to tell a kid not to drive. So then they're driving and they're suspended.
You're talking about losing your license for drinking, or losing your license for smoking marijuana, or losing your license for some other crime?
I think it's being drinking underage. You can lose your license, right, for a year.
I don't know anything about that.
I believe that's true.
He believes it's true. So you're suggesting...
So I'm saying that just little things like that, something like that, is the start of someone doing, you know, violating probation later on and going to state prison.
So your point is well taken.
They drank as a youth.
So it's not merely if you're drinking and driving, but if you're simply drinking, you can lose your license.
Right, if you're under 21.
So Mike, there's a good question for you. Let's jump from the shoulder tap to that one question. This is clearly incarceration of young people. Would you oppose this as a law?
I strongly oppose it.
So Mike Rotkin, as you come out against the idea of incarceration for young people, losing your license for drinking, not driving at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's an inappropriate response to the problem. I mean, I think people should lose their license for drinking and driving, but that's a very different issue than if you get, you know, caught with a joint or have a problem with a drink or something that they're going to take your license away for a year. You might want to lose it for a week or something. A wake-up call wouldn't be a problem, but to say to somebody you're not going to drive for a year because you got caught with a beer somewhere in public as an outrage, and that's an example to me, again, where you incarcerate people. It's a very different story than putting them into the... And then this is a key issue. Whether you're going to put people into kind of a counseling program, get them some attention for the problem, get them to recognize there's something not right here if they're hanging out in front of a liquor store trying to, like, shoulder tap people, that's a very different question than should we lock people up because they had a drink somewhere, which is a whole different issue to me. It's a very different question.
Any other questions, caller?
No, I just think that it's we can't just take like a small percentage of what's going on and just focus on that and say like that's the problem, like the liquor stores, but like kids running around in the flats, you know, isn't a problem till we decide that it's a problem. You know, if we're gonna like get serious about kids, let's get serious about kids. But like,
how can we get serious about kids, Colin?
Well, I think starting would be, you know, there's supposedly like $150,000 set aside for a youth center, and like from what I hear, they're saying, well, no one's come up with a plan. It's like, you know, who's supposed to come up with a plan? But like, why can't city council themselves come up with a plan, or why can't somebody initiate? You know,
there's actually a youth. The reason we haven't come up with one is because we assigned it to a group that includes a number of adolescents and young people and asked them to figure out what kind of a youth center they wanted to have. It was almost 3 years, 4 years ago now that we set the money aside, and it's now $225,000. It was originally $150,000, and it's waiting for this group to sort of make some concrete suggestions to us. Rather than us plan on their youth center, we want them to plan it.
What's the name of the group?
Yeah, for...
I don't know the name of it, but the Christina Della Mar is the city parks and recs person that works with the young people.
It's certainly a long time.
The young people's group. Yes, I've been really disappointed in it and really concerned about it. I raised it a number of times, what's happened to this and why is it moving ahead. But it's not that the city council, I mean, the money is usually the hard part. We put that up front. The issue now is probably going to be a combination of two things, part of which I think is on the youth and part of which is on the city council and the city. The part on the youth is what kind of a center do they want? It has to be one that's effective. Nobody wants to create a center no one's going to use. The other part of it is where would it go? And I'm sure like everything else in this town, the where question becomes really difficult. And at least if the young people got a clear sense of what kind of center they wanted, I would be on top of the case of where it goes and pushing harder to see.
I think it should go right where that Crown Books was. Why, you know, but obviously they're going to keep the kids out of the north part of the mall, you know.
Anything else, caller?
No, thanks.
Thank you for calling. Let me ask... Becky Johnson here has been consulting her notes. I want to get back to Shoulder Tap to some extent, which I know, you know, is... I guess the question that comes to my mind is, indeed, it's not any kind of compulsory incarceration, but it is a form of criminalization in the sense that you're not saying, we have alcohol programs. Come on into the alcohol programs. We can help. We're not just talking about, you know, give your soul to God and do a 12-step program. We're not talking about, you know... some sort of punitive thing or some sort of... We have some alternatives like with heroin addicts. You say to heroin addicts, we've got programs for you to come in, and you're swamped. People want to come in from heroin addiction in many cases. And alcohol programs. And they just are not the programs available. Instead, the police department is finding a way... It isn't really providing more programs with this proposal. Instead, it is essentially engaging in a process of stigmatizing and criminalizing in a limited fashion. It doesn't necessarily lead to incarceration, but we are talking about crime. This is because an infraction is a crime. Becky, do you have any thoughts on this? After which I'll suggest Mike might want to have some thoughts too. I mean, isn't there another way to go on this whole thing than criminalize?
Well, of course. And going back to what Mike was saying about Terry Moriarty supporting this as being, you know, in the social services area. There's not unanimity of opinion in the social services. I have a letter here from Emily Galpern, who's of the Youth Coalition of Santa Cruz. She's an adult who works with youth on a daily basis, and she's opposed to this. She says young people are constantly bombarded with glamorous alcohol advertisements, and she's concerned about the growing criminalization of young people. It's become a national trend, and she sees this as just another example. Another point, you can respond to that if you'd like. I wanted to go back to another thing that you said, that it was a very tiny issue, small. You thought it would just breeze through quickly and move on to more important things. But I am more bothered by this than it would seem. My main concern about this law is not about youth drinking. The shoulder tap law is about businesses that are seeking to expand stay-away orders. Now, these are court orders which will ban an individual young person from not only from that business, but a lot of times these court orders ban a person from the entire downtown area. And they may also, these stay-away orders may include all kinds of sort of restrictions, such as, which are depending on the judge's mood, really. They might be search clauses or orders not to gather with other people who are also similarly convicted. I predict the law will be selectively enforced against homeless youth, counterculture youth, and youth of color, as we find many of our ordinances are. If young people are gathering around a business that happens to sell alcohol, all we need is a cop who talks to a merchant, and the two of them agree that that's what these young people outside their store are trying to do. An infraction, of course, means that there's no right to a public defender or a jury trial. And it sounds like with the juvenile justice system, that whole process of determining guilt and innocence is sort of bypassed.
Actually, just on that, no, it's only if the youth and their family doesn't want to fight the thing and go to court on it. In other words, there are often solutions. It's like, it's not the right term, but plea bargaining, you know, is being a closer parallel to it. You don't go to court if you agree before you get there. Even there, you go to court in a plea bargain, the court sort of imposes the stuff that works out with these with young
people. But
you
still get a record on a plea bargain.
No, I know, when you go to court, but the thing is, you might not get a record at all in terms of these kinds of situations, because it will never get to court, because it'll be solved because the young person decides not, you know, say, yeah, I did it, but it, you know, it's, and they say, well, you shouldn't do it, so they, and it's not right on the blackboard. They get them to write an essay that's what hopefully, at least in theory, supposed to be reflective about.
And it won't be on their record?
It depends on the individual case.
See, this is the question I have. I mean, it's so vague. I mean, I would like, you're a man who's had experience for 20 years in Santa Cruz with different aspects of the criminal justice system, but do you have any clear sense of how young people are treated, you know, around this, not so much even around this issue, but in terms of this whole process? I mean, it's not clear to us.
Yeah, I mean, I think this really cuts to the heart of what this is about. If, in fact, what happened is people violating this ordinance found themselves on a quick train to, you know, the criminal justice system, to a criminal record, to juvenile hall and everything else, I would be opposed to it. I think it would be a disaster. And when we look at it, you have to be careful in trying to compare what we're doing here in Santa Cruz with other communities, because there are other communities where to come to the attention of juvenile authorities is, in fact, a quick trip to CYA, California Youth Authority, or other kinds of forms of incarceration or serious kinds of penalties. And in Santa Cruz, the Juvenile Probation Department has worked really hard to come up with non-criminal justice, but a non-punitive approach, restorative justice ideas that, you know, when young people commit crimes against people, stealing from them and so forth, that the idea that locking them up is not necessarily a good solution, either for the victim or for the young person.
But they still get a record.
They may get, in that case, if it was a theft, it would be a serious crime, and, you know, might be a felony or a misdemeanor, but in terms of these infractions, but they've established a system here where they really, it is more counseling than it's, in terms of how what actually goes on, much more counseling is situation than a locked up criminal justice system. And they end up basically meeting with a probation officer in some cases for a number of weeks, and then are dropped from the system if things work out well. I want to say this is important. I want to respond to two things that came up, because I never get a chance to get these points in. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a free speech issue. It's free speech if you're saying, if a person wants to stand on the corner and say, young people should be allowed to drink, leave us alone, or we should be allowed to drink under certain circumstances or whatever, that's free speech. Asking somebody to buy you a drink is an act, it's a commission of something. It's not a free, it's not a statement of your views about something in the world. And it's a mistake when, and we've had the same debate over homeless issues and over some sleeping ban questions, the fact that one thing to sort of speak out about your views about some issue, and I believe strongly those should not be repressed, and that anybody should have the right to stand in front of a liquor store or any place else, hold a sign, give a speech about the rights of young people being abused, and if they believe we should change the law or whatever, that's fine. That's different than the actual act of asking, of, you know, starting a process of trying to get alcohol. And on the question of where this is likely to go, you said, well, it's not automatically something that sends some people to jail. My prediction is nobody will be arrested under this law. ask the question, now we'll go back and we have a history on this, on the downtown ordinances, which among other things deal with aggressive panhandling, ask the question, since this thing passed, how many people have been arrested under the aggressive panhandling ordinance that we passed in the city of Santa Cruz? Zero. Nobody.
Oh, no.
Not a single person has been arrested under that law.
False. False.
Well, I'd be interested to come back and show sometime and talk about it.
I can send you to public defenders who have been repeatedly arrested under the panhandling ordinance. No, and you're wrong on that, Mike.
Well, that's not my information.
Yeah, I'd be happy to get you, but contact me later. What?
Not the aggressive.
Well, it depends on what you mean. If people have been arrested.
The downtown ordinances.
Yes. There was
a bunch of arrests that happened early on for people sitting on the sidewalk.
No, I'm talking about arrests for panhandling. The violation of the specific municipal codes, yes.
Okay, I'd be interested to know more about that because I look through the records every month and I haven't seen anybody being arrested for that.
What records are you? You were talking about the police department's records.
Sends the records every month on, you know,
yeah, we'll have to send you some of the public defenders who are defending these people.
But my prediction is this is more an ordinance that will have an educational effect, that a small number of people may be cited under it. That's possible. It's most likely that this is not, because again, the people that are arrested probably would be arrested under the stronger law that exists now if they actually reach the point of getting alcohol on their hands through this process. This is more likely going to be something that allows a police officer, and I don't think this is bad. You might think this is bad, but I don't. Allows a police officer to say to somebody, look, we just got a report that you've asked three people in a row to get you booze. They complained to the clerk inside, and right now there's nothing the officers can do about that. They can come out and they say, if we catch you with a beer, you're going to be in big trouble. But it's not against the law for the person to keep asking.
Sure, but
and the police officers don't have the time. We don't have that many officers in Santa Cruz where they're going to stand at the liquor store, and of course if they stand there, it won't happen.
I think if a young person is told this by a police officer that we know you're outside the liquor store, they will the vamoose lickety split.
They may, but they may not. In fact, one of the issues we have is that people just hang out there, and the police officers come and they say you shouldn't be doing this, and there's no particular law that's being broken or issue about it. And I really honestly don't believe there's going to be a large number of kids of any kind swept up by this, put into the criminal justice system or anything else. I think what it's going to be is one little small deterrent in an overall situation. Now, let me be clear about Terry Moriarty. He is not in favor of this as the big solution. He was dragged out of the audience.
Of course.
He wasn't the one that came down and advocated for this.
No.
And they asked, well, what do you think about this? And he said, well, this would be, I support this. This would be a good thing to do. But of course, the first thing you want to do is have programs for young people, both positive programs and, as you'd mentioned, Robert, alternative programs for people who want to get off, who are alcoholics or have problems with alcohol and want to get into a program to deal with that. And this is a very small piece at the end of something, and I feel that strongly. I wouldn't support this in the absence of actual programs for young people, both positive and alternative.
I want to respond to your comment about whether it's a First Amendment issue of freedom of speech. It does criminalize the content of speech.
We're going to interrupt this discussion for a quick call from Seattle, which is just coming in long distance. Hi there, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, we are here in Seattle. We have been in the streets. There is so much energy here. It is so powerful. You know, the fascist state can do what they can, but there are so many people from all over the world here.
What happened today, Jeff?
Well, today there was a peaceful rally, mostly peaceful, always peaceful, really, actually. And we marched from the United Methodist Church down to the park at the lower end near the Pike's Market, and we heard Jim Hightower and Ralph Nader and a myriad number of other activists, local activists.
Now, we understand from yesterday's papers, or today's paper, that the police cordoned off 50 blocks downtown.
Yes, they had a national state of emergency. There was the National Guard in there, and they were trying to keep people out. You know,
Pardon? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, keeping people out, but, you know, it was, it all was the intent to keep them away from,
were there any arrests?
Us away from.
Did they succeed in stopping you from blocking the delegates?
Well, yeah, no, we were only able to do that the Tuesday morning when we were sitting in solidarity with thousands of other activists blocking, we blocked the Sheraton.
And what happened? Today that didn't happen.
No, that didn't happen. Because the cops moved in with tear gas and mace.
Was there any of that happening today, any macing or tear gas?
I didn't see any tear gassing today. There was, of course, extensive amount. Actually, there was today in Capitol Hill area, so in certain areas.
Were there arrests?
arrests?
Not arrests. What they do is they intimidate. They shove with their batons. They mace residents. I mean residents, people who live there. This is an occupied city by the police fascist state. It's incredible, but it's right there, and that's what's good about this, because people can then see the nature of who we're dealing with.
Well, now, are your numbers diminishing, increasing, staying the same? What's the plan
for tomorrow? There was like 3,000 or 4,000 people today, and you know the cops stopped us. We marched a certain distance, and then they stopped us. They cordoned it off, and you know the decision has been made, I think, not to try to breach the police barricade. I mean, it's a very would be a very difficult thing to do. And
are Santa Cruzans in jail up there?
Oh yes, we have people from our affinity group in jail. Ruth Hunter, one of the incredible activists, local activists, is in jail today. I think Peter Lumsdaine is. Many people locally are.
I think Mike is going to fly up there and join them in solidarity, right, Mike?
Who?
Mike Rodkin. He's in the studio.
Yeah, well, that's, you know.
I'm kidding. I got no news that he's going to do that.
No, but there is an incredible amount of solidarity here. We, you know, the cops.
Earlier in the day, people were.
I mean, these agreements benefit the major multinationals, the transnationals, the Cargills and the Archer Daniel Midlands, and you know all these folks that have major interest in the government.
So, are you going to be staying up there for the next few days? What are your plans?
I'm leaving Saturday night, but there are plenty of people in solidarity here. There's a lot of.
Is there a number that local Santa Cruzans can call if they want more information about what's going on up in Seattle? Do you have a phone number you want to give out?
Let's see.
People can call the Resource Center for Nonviolence here in town. They're keeping pretty close tabs. And that number is 423-1626.
The Direct Action Network number.
Yeah, Mike Rodkin just suggested the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Do you recommend that number?
Yeah, that would be good.
And again, that number is?
423-1626.
423-1626.
Yeah.
Jeff, is there more you want to say? Or?
Just remember that we are engaged in a peaceful demonstration no matter how the media portrays it. And the 99.9% of the people are peaceful, and we are getting our message across. And just remember,
Mike Rodkin has something he wants to say to you.
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
Hi, I just want to thank you for being there, let you know that you're representing a lot of people in Santa Cruz, and appreciate your approach to this thing. And it's very clear that the vast majority of people there are interested in the peaceful but strong demonstration against the WTO and everything it stands for. And thank you for representing us there.
Yeah, well, thank you for just getting the information out. I mean, I think more and more people are waking up.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
And back to the shoulder tap, or perhaps other issues here. But
I'm going to have to go fairly soon. I have about 10 minutes. So.
Mike has about 10 minutes. So, Becky, do you have any questions of Mike you want to put to him, or any points you want to make? I guess, Mike, you were making the last few points when the call came in.
Well, I was talking about the First Amendment issues about that it does criminalize the content of speech, and that in the recently Salinas had a panhandling ordinance that was struck down in the courts precisely for that reason, that it was criminalizing the content of speech. One other issue that we haven't gotten into is City of Santa Cruz has an enormous number of alcohol outlets, probably about twice as many as a city of its size.
Twice the state average.
It seems to me if we're trying to reduce youth consumption of alcohol, we have to do something about how many outlets we have in the city. Why couldn't the city council adopt a policy that whenever a business is sold and they want to pass that alcohol license on to a new owner, that by attrition we start closing these down?
Let's we've got an incoming. I know Mike, you want to answer. Let's get this other caller as well, so we can
shorter.
Make it a 30-second answer.
Oh, quicker. Yeah. We actually have an ordinance in Santa Cruz that has to do with attempting to regulate the number of outlets we have in town, and it's not a question of the law. It's more like the enforcement of it, because as a practical reality, these licenses have a certain value, and if the city just takes them away from people arbitrarily, we would have to end up basically buying their license up, which would be quite expensive. But I support the concept you're talking about, and it's an issue issue of trying to find those opportunities where we've done it twice now, where we actually have closed down places. In one case, we had to pay quite a bit of money to close a place down.
How many places do we have in...
I don't know the number, but it is twice the state average.
We have a caller on the line. A caller got a question or a statement you want to make?
Well, thing that I'm concerned about with this law is that they're saying that the justice system for the juveniles is a lot less lenient. I mean, it's a lot more lenient than it is for adults. But the problem that I see with this law is the way it'll be applied is that a kid from the Upper West Side or from Aptos or somewhere that has a mother and father at home and has never gotten in trouble before or anything like that, nothing's going to happen to them. They'll write an essay. But some kid whose parents happen to be homeless, or maybe he only has one parent, or lives in a van with his parents, or lives in a little shack in Lompico somewhere, and maybe the parents have a drinking problem themselves, all of a sudden that kid is going to be put through the ringer and may actually end up, in some instances, being taken away from their parents.
Thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, I think this again cuts to the heart of what we're talking about here. Let's take this case. We're making this up, obviously. A Lompico kid with one parent, and the parents have got an alcohol problem, and kids out there in front of a liquor store, shoulder tapping people to try and get booze for themselves. Again, the notion that the government shouldn't get involved in these things is we should leave this kid alone, we should not make this a crime, we should somehow have, I think we all agree, there should be alternatives for the young person, positive things they could be doing, there should be counseling, there should be alcohol programs. But we should never, drag them in any way into the criminal justice system. The problem is, for many of these kids, if there's not some attention paid to them by juvenile probation, nothing's going to confront them with the problems that they're involved in. The behavior will continue to the point that more serious kinds of things happen, because that's what happens with alcohol abuse. And I believe, and the question then becomes, how do you organize the juvenile justice system in such a way that it's not punitive, that what happens to this kid is not that he gets locked up because he's got a single parent, or his parents are the parent is an alcoholic, but in fact, they get some decent counseling from somebody, they get some attention, some positive help from somebody, and I really believe that that's where our system is trying to go here locally. It's not perfect, but I think it happens more in that direction than the opposite, which is their kid's going to be thrown in jail because their parents are poor.
Caller, what do you think?
Well, I still think that the law will not be applied evenly. The poor kids that have parents of little means, are going to end up being more severely punished under this law than kids whose parents have lots of money.
Becky, any comments on this?
Well, I wanted to say that Tim Fitzmaurice, when he was visiting some of the high schools, told the students that if they got cited under this law, it would be a $100 fine. I don't see that in the content of the way it's written in this ordinance. Also, why doesn't it say whether it's an infraction or a misdemeanor in the content of the ordinance, in the actual language?
It doesn't need to, because municipal codes are always infraction unless it specifically says that it's a misdemeanor. So there's no question about that. It's an infraction.
Of course, the question arises, if there's a multiple offense, often that can be a misdemeanor. I don't know. Is there some exception in this particular code?
Yes.
I don't see it.
That would not be the case. That would not be the case here. And again, you have to write that in. It doesn't happen automatically. And this would only be an infraction. It would not rise to the level of misdemeanor under any circumstance. The only circumstance that you could cite, which again is the person does other kinds of things. Christopher gave the example earlier of a kid who's already on probation or somebody's already been in the criminal justice system. So in those kind of circumstances, this could have some impact that rises at the level of misdemeanors. But this itself doesn't sort of work its way up through multiples into either misdemeanors or become a misdemeanor or end up with kids getting incarcerated for it. And again, anything in society, could end up with a person and end up eventually, a speeding ticket in a car could eventually end up with incarceration if you ignore the court, if the kid doesn't respond or something. So, I mean, it's not as if...
Well, that's a good point, because failures to appear are the cause for half the camping tickets, for example, in town under the sleeping ban go to failure to appear.
But that's probably less of an issue with I would think, with young people in town than it tends to be with camping or things which are not necessarily local residents. Many of them are, but some are not. Whereas these kids, I'm assuming for the vast majority of them at least, are going to be local kids who have no reason not to make it to court.
It seems the presupposition here is that involving kids with the police is somehow going to be have a positive impact on their drinking problems. That's your contention.
Yeah, and I think the issue is we've had a long view. I come from a civil libertarian background, and I'm a member of the ACLU. And
not
I understand.
Recently.
Well, no.
At least
I'm
not around the downtown.
Send my dues regularly. I'm a card-carrying member.
But the ACLU's position is different from your position on a lot of issues on
yes,
city council.
That's often the case. Mm-hmm. But my view is that we should stop viewing the police as always sort of the punitive arm of evil that comes down on people. But in fact, the whole community policing model is the notion that the police need to be more integrated in the community, and that cuts in two directions. It means that the police need to become less punitive, the police need to see their job as more tied into the social service aspects of things, and it also means that the opposite is also the case, that the social service programs and so forth need to be better integrated into these kinds of dealing with these problems and not wait for the kid to walk into a program under his own steam, but often the police can become a resource here in a way that they haven't been in the past. And I see that this transforming the nature of the police and transforming the nature of the social service programs, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
But do the youth see the police as a resource? I mean, let's look at the curfew ordinance, for example. That's when you
ask people now how they feel about the police, and again, it would depend on the individual circumstance, but in general, the attitude towards police, not just among young people, but among everybody. The police say, the first response is if you see a red light flash, you know there's some trouble. Somebody's out to get me.
The second response and the third response. Have you investigated, let's say, the consequences that young people feel after being involved with the police? I mean, do you think, based on your research, that there is a significant, at the first I thought these guys were just a bunch of gun-carrying thugs that just wanted to impose their way of life, but now I realize they're after my own best interests?
I see some real change.
Has that impact?
I don't think it's been even close to 50%, much less 100%, but I see significant changes. The students I work with at the university on field studies, many of them work with the juvenile hall, the criminal justice system, alternative programs, many of which are locked programs where kids are already in trouble with the law in some way. And I think there is a transformation going on where people in the past thought, police bad, police evil, police out to do me harm.
In who?
In the minds of university students,
in the minds of
high school students. For example, if you go and talk to high school students at Santa Cruz High about the police officers that work on their campuses, you don't get this kind of wave of negative, they're all horrible thugs or something.
Really?
Not to say that there aren't some kids that still feel that way, but I think there's been a very dramatic transformation among young people on this question.
Becky's reaching for the mic. Can she respond briefly?
Remember when you were at Santa Cruz High and Michael Hernandez asked the kids about how they felt about the cops, and one kid after another got up and felt that the cops treat them like pariahs, that they're hassling them, constantly harassing them. I mean, several students got him up. Not one came and supported. I don't think Mike got the answer he was looking for on that particular question, but it does seem to fly in the face of what you're saying right now.
Robert asked me what my experience has been, and I've talked to lots of high school kids. I've gone and talked to high schools. I do it regularly. To junior high schools where these police officers there and asked the same question and gotten a much more mixed response. Now, the kids I talk to are generally in a classroom where it's sort of a mixed, they're there because it's a whole classroom full of seventh graders or of ninth graders, rather than a group that came to a particular hearing for a particular reason. I think I think what I'm getting is a random kind of selection of high school kids, and I think it's very mixed, is what I'm saying. Some of the kids have the view that you're expressing clearly, and others have a very strong view
the
that these officers are people that they get along with well, and they don't see
the
them
question
as their
is,
enemies.
What is the reality? Are they suffering harassment generally, and on the basis of age discrimination? This is what I think a number of young people claim. And caller, do you have any thoughts on this, or is there other questions you wish to ask Mike before he disappears, or any comments you want to make?
Well, I was just, the big problem I also have with this is it doesn't really spell out a maximum extent that they will go to if someone's arrested under this. That there's this whole litany of things that could possibly happen to these kids. And if this is going to be a no-brainer law that, everybody should pass instantly and not even think about, well, let's have it completely spelled out, exactly what's going to happen to these kids, and look at that and see if we really want
the total extent of what might happen to them happening to them.
I think the problem here is that there's very little knowledge about the way the criminal justice system works, particularly the juvenile. We know more about the adult system because all of us have been there for a traffic ticket or something or whatever, and or seen on TV, if nothing else, the way at least it's represented, whereas the juvenile justice system is very complex. It's a very much more subtle system in some ways in terms of how people are dealt with, and I think that the caller is correct that there can be consequences that are severe, but I think the issue here is not statistics. It's not a matter of spelling out things properly. It's more a question of really understanding how does the system work and what happens, what are the various scenarios that can happen if a person is in fact brought into the system through a site. It wouldn't be normally arrest. It would be through a citation through the system.
It's also a question of whether you trust this system to actually have beneficial effects on the young people as it currently exists.
And I don't think the question is saying yes
and the caller is saying no.
I don't think it's a matter of trusting the system. I think it's a matter of working with the system and having some sense of involvement in it, which I feel like I do. And I think members of the public beyond city officials should have that level of involvement and understand how the system works. And if people see problems with the system and how it actually functions, they should get involved in trying to change that. Because I think we have a very unique juvenile justice system here that really is trying to change itself. It's very unlike the juvenile justice system in a lot of other states where I've lived. It's very unlike the juvenile justice system even in San Jose, which is much more punitive than the one that operates here.
It's hard for me to take you at your word on that, Mike, because I know I'm hoping to do that because your record on civil rights in terms of dispossessed groups locally has not been a particularly good one for the last decade, at least for most of us watching, whether it be the right to sleep at night or the right to peacefully ask for spare change after dark in a non-aggressive manner. Whatever it is, you've acted to criminalize these kinds of behaviors.
Let me say one thing, because I know you're going on about it, just to say I don't agree with your characterization of my views on the issue. Just so the listener should at least know that, my not responding doesn't mean I'm agreeing with everything that's about to follow.
Mike has to go, and no doubt he will explain to you how he disagrees with us.
I find that the juvenile justice system is very arcane, and the public is not invited in there. It's very hard to even get an advocate into the juvenile justice courts. I've been up at the juvenile hall up on Graham Hill and been treated very rudely by staff up there who just obviously don't want observers in that system. And so, juveniles really don't have the kinds of supports when they go through that process.
The caller has another point, by the way, for Mike before you answer that. I'm sorry, he wanted to quit. He's been waiting. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, he's kind of saying the juvenile justice system is this velvet glove or something, and I personally know a number of families here within the county whose kids have gone through that system and it basically tore their families apart. And I don't understand how you can ignore things like that and just say, oh, this is going to be in the best interest of these children. It won't necessarily be in the best interest of anybody except a bunch of lawyers.
Well, I think you need to look at, again, individual cases, because there certainly are cases where I'm sure the system's been negative for people, but there are an awful lot of cases where were it not for the intervention of the juvenile justice system, these kids would be in a lot more trouble than they're in now.
And the other point, am I still there?
Go ahead.
Yeah, the other point I wanted to make was that in Margaret Marr's letter at the end, she includes part of the criminal code of the state of California, which shows that this is not a loophole you're closing. It is already illegal in the state of California to knowingly ask somebody to commit an illegal act. So a juvenile asking an adult to buy alcohol for them is already illegal in the state of California.
Let me ask, it's illegal to ask
somebody to do something knowing that what you're asking them to do is illegal.
Then why would I be all this concerned about it? If it's already illegal, then we're guilty of redundancy, but that's hardly a reason for social movement.
Well, I'll tell you the reason. The answer to that question is obvious. If you make it an infraction, you enable the police to engage in these kinds of arrests more easily. Prosecutions become cheaper, and it becomes a way of enmeshing more people in the criminal justice system, perhaps under the illusion that you're helping them by doing this. Are you claiming, Mike, that it's not currently a crime, that the caller is wrong, that Margaret Marr is in error here?
there are a number of things that may be currently illegal, but that are, as you, I agree with you on this case, that are very difficult to prosecute or deal with because it's so indirect. The idea that it's illegal to solicit anybody to do something illegal is a pretty indirect thing, and you bring that to court, it's not going anywhere. So I believe in laws that are much more...
pretty glib. I don't know if that's necessarily
It's not
true.
Glib. I believe in laws that are direct, clear, that people understand what's illegal, and the notion that there's an umbrella law in the state that says everything's illegal, to me, is both dangerous in general and specifically not helpful when it comes to particular things. I mean, the same debate took place on the issues downtown. It's illegal to assault people. So people said, why do you need to have ordinances that are...
we did indeed.
That why do you have to have an ordinance?
Because the merchants want them. That's the reason.
No, the reason is because, in fact, you don't want to overcharge people. You don't want to be in a situation where you're charging a person with a serious assault charge when what they've done is be obnoxious in a way that's beyond the level of reasonable behavior in public.
You want
so you want an ordinance that actually sets out that says this behavior is unacceptable. If you get involved in it, there'll be an infraction. You'll face consequences for it. But we're not going to drag you to jail because you were overly aggressive in asking somebody for money.
Well, in fact, you do drag people to jail unless they sign tickets.
I do have to go out, but I want to thank you for inviting me on the show. Thank the caller for calling me.
Thank you, Mike, for being here, and we're going to hope that someday you will see the light. Thank you, Mike. Caller, anything you want to say before we hang up the phone here and give someone else a chance?
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Right.
Becky Johnson, you look like you got something you want to say.
I'm wondering why the city council went to Santa Cruz High School and solicited the input of the students there, the people who are likely to be affected by this law, when of the people that did speak, I think 8 students got up and spoke, 7 were opposed. Mike himself said he received a petition that said 155 names of students that were opposed to the law, and the petition that I circulated with about 3 other people at Harbor High and Santa Cruz High, we got another 65 names, all opposed to this law. Why did they go to ask these students' opinions if they're going to ignore what they said?
Because, of course, they were making a token effort and attempting to show their liberal constituencies that they were just oh so feel good and sweet and concerned about the rights of the people involved. As I said, they didn't go to the universities where they would have encountered some real hardened opposition to this kind of law. Who knows, maybe even protests. Instead, they went to a little classroom setting where heavily infiltrated by police, I might add. I've never seen so many police in a city council meeting in my life. Perhaps the only other time is when it was in the courtroom of Steve Argue when he was convicted, when half the courtroom was filled with cops. It was amazing. I mean, that's the answer, I think, Becky.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was just a showcase sort of thing, and that they really aren't interested in what the young people have to say. Another thing that I thought was interesting was this question about this youth center and where is this money for the youth center. Back in July of 1997, Scott Kennedy said that there was $250,000 in a fund for the youth center. And then at the November 1st city council meeting, Catherine Byer says that there's $125,000. And then just tonight, Mike Rodkin says there's $225,000. And that they've been working on it for 4 years and haven't gotten anywhere. It's kind of a mishmash. Doesn't sound like it's a very high priority at all. I'm wondering if those funds actually exist at all and what they are. We certainly are putting our money and our time and our energy where the city's priorities are, and they are police and incarceration. They're catering to what the merchants are asking for. They're certainly not rushing out to build the skate park or the teen center.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, Mike has assured us that that's only because the group that they selected 4 years ago hasn't done anything.
Yeah, that was interesting to hear that. I'm wondering why somebody 3 years ago didn't say, what's going on, group here? We're looking for recommendations. If you can't handle it, we'll find somebody else who will. Again, I think that, you know, actions speak louder than words, and this council really is not terribly interested in the needs of youth in this community. They should be allocating their time, their resources, and their money for educational programs about alcohol. And, all these alcohol providers, they provide a lot of tax income. for the city. So I'm not surprised that Mike said that it was going to be very difficult to close down alcohol outlets in the city.
What I really object to, both from both these city council members, is in Crone's case, of course, I agree with his position on the shoulder tap law, and it's nice that he brings up the civil liberties issue, and I'm glad